grenades. Leave nothing alive.
Sir, did you hear me?
The exec asked, stepping closer to him. Harbin swiveled the chair slightly toward her. My hearing is perfect, he said calmly. Tell your troops to stand down. I won't need them.
They can search the habitat.
No, Harbin said softly, almost gently. That won't be necessary. Why risk them when we can destroy the habitat from here?
But Fuchs...
Fuchs will die with the rest of the rock rats, Harbin said. He wanted to laugh. It was all so simple. You killed your enemies, and then they will never be able to hurt you again. Why can't she see that? It's so logical, so beautifully clear. He dismissed the executive officer and began to calmly, methodically, thoroughly destroy Chrysalis and everyone in it.
Torch Ship Elsinore. The wall screen in Edith's compartment lit up to show the ship's captain. He looked shaken. You'd better come up to the bridge and see this, he said, his voice trembling. They're destroying the habitat. Big George boiled out into the passageway and charged up toward the bridge, Edith running hard behind him. The captain and the two crew members on the bridge looked ashen, dazed. Through the observation port, Edith could see Chrysalis. Three of its modules were ripped apart, chunks of metal and structure floating aimlessly. As she watched, invisible laser beams began slicing through another module. Air burst into the vacuum of space in glittering wisps of ice and dissipated in an eye blink. All in silence. Total, deadly, complete silence. Shapes came tumbling through one of the gouges torn in the module skin. Bodies, Edith realized. Those are human bodies.
The bloody fucking bastard! George growled.
He pounded both fists against the thick quartz of the observation port.
Bloody fucking bastard!
He bellowed. Can't we do something? Edith asked the captain. He shook his head. Not a thing. But there must be something. Call for help. Our antennas are out. Even if we had Fuchs aboard or knew where he is, we wouldn't be able to tell him now. Edith felt the strength ebbing out of her. I'm watching 1,000 people dying, being killed. George looked on the verge of tears. The captain was a white-faced statue. There's nothing we can do? She asked. Nothing except wait, said the captain. We're probably next.
Once he realized what was happening, Yanni bolted from the useless comm center and down the habitat's central passageway. Ilona! I've got to find Ilona! Their quarters were three modules down the passageway. At this time of night, she should be in their bedroom, asleep. He had to fight his way past a screaming mob at the module's airlock, fighting to grab the pitifully few spacesuits stored there. Why is this happening? Yanni asked himself as he ran toward the hatch that led to his wife. Why are they killing us? Then the bulkhead ahead of him split apart, and a blast of air like a whirlwind lifted him off his feet and out into the dark, cold emptiness beyond. He had just time enough to understand that it didn't matter why or who or anything else. He was dead, and Ilona was too.
The exec simply stood by Harbin's side as he carefully, precisely, cut up the modules of the chrysalis habitat. When the last unit was reduced to a broken shambles, he looked up at her and saw fear in her eyes. Fear and shock and disgust.
There,
Harbin said, lifting both hands from the armrest keyboards.
It's done. Fuchs is dead. I've accomplished my mission.
The exec seemed to stir, as if coming out of a trance. Are... Her voice caught, and she coughed slightly. Are you certain he was in the habitat? Then she added, sir. Harbin ignored her question.
They're all dead. Now we can go home and be safe.
He got up from the command chair slowly, almost leisurely, and stretched his arms up to the metal overhead.
I'm rather tired. I'm going in for a nap. You have the con.
Yes, sir, she said. As she watched him go to the hatch and duck through it, she thought about the ships in parking orbits around Chrysalis, witnesses to the slaughter, and Fuchs might in reality be aboard any one of them. She shook her head. I can testify that he did it on his own. He even dismissed the rest of us from the bridge. I returned to try to dissuade him, but he wouldn't listen to me. I couldn't disobey a superior officer, and I certainly couldn't overpower the man. He acted alone. She rehearsed her testimony. It was entirely his doing. She slipped into the command chair and summoned the rest of the bridge crew. One of the ships parked nearby was an HSS logistics vessel. We'll refuel and reprovision from her, the exec thought, and then double back to Vesta.
Harbin saw several of his troopers idling in the galley, down at the end of the passageway from the bridge. Still in full armor, bristling with guns and grenades. Stand down, he called to them. We won't be boarding the habitat. And he giggled. There's no habitat to board, he added silently. As he entered his privacy compartment, he seemed to recall that there was an incoming ship that might be harboring Fuchs. He shook his head foggily. No, that can't be. I killed Fuchs. I killed them all. All of them. He tottered to the lab and splashed cold water on his face. Drugs wearing off, he realized. They wear off quicker and quicker. I must be building a tolerance to them. Have to tell the medics when we get back to Vesta. Need something stronger, better lasting. He flopped onto his bed and closed his eyes. Sleep, he told himself. I need sleep. Without dreams. No dreaming. Please, don't let me dream.
Doug Stavanger would not allow either Pancho or Humphreys to leave his living room. They sat there and watched him desperately trying to reestablish contact with his wife at Ceres. Pancho offered him the full resources of Astro Corporation. After checking with her handheld, she told Stavanger, "We got three ships docked at Ceres. I've sent an order for them to report to me here." "That will take an hour or more," Stavanger said. Pancho shrugged. "No way I can make it happen faster." Humphreys remained on the sofa, silent, his eyes following Stavanger's every move, every gesture. Pancho felt contempt for the man, and a certain tiny speck of pity. Doug'll kill him, she knew, if anything's happened to his wife. All of Humphreys' money can't help him one little iota now. Doug'll tear him apart. They waited. Stavanger sending urgent, desperate messages to every ship in the belt. Humphreys sitting frozen with fear. Pancho churning the entire situation over and over in her mind, time and again, going over every detail she could think of, reliving the chain of events that had led to this place, this moment, this fearful point in space-time. "There's somebody else who ought to be here," she said at last. Stavanger froze the image on the wall screen and turned to look at her, obviously annoyed at her interruption. "Yamagata," Pancho went on, despite his irritation. "Nobuhiko Yamagata should be here if you want to stop this war." Humphreys stirred himself. "Just because his corporation provides mercenary troops, he's behind this whole thing," Pancho said. Stavanger gave her his full attention. "What do you mean?" "Yamagata's the money behind the Nairobi base at the South Pole," said Pancho. "He's been renting mercenaries to Astro and HSS both." "So?" She jabbed a finger at Humphreys. "You say you didn't set up that accident with the cable car?" "I didn't," Humphreys said. "Then who else would have done it? Who's sitting fat and happy while you and me bleed ourselves to death? Who stands to take over if Astro and HSS go broke?" "Yamagata," Humphreys breathed. "Yamagata?" Stavanger.